This is a podcast from the Queen City Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone. My name is Logan, and that, of course, means you're listening to another episode of The Crown Cast. And we've had a lot of fun stuff going on recently. We've had interviews with Brandon Cambridge. We finally got football back. So there's so much football to talk about, all of these games. We could spend literally hours talking about the fact that Toronto specifically forms their weather to make Charlotte FC players uncomfortable. I think we can call that a fact. And here to discuss how weather manipulation affects football is Ewan. Hello, Ewan.
Hello. Yeah, we can call it a fact, and also borderline cheating, really, to play in a place that cold. So we've got to do something about it.
Yeah, there should be rules. And here to discuss how we change those rules is Josh. Hello, Josh.
Hey, guys. I'm okay with the weather.
Wait, what? What? No, we had the whole bit set up, Josh. You've got to help
us. I know, but you always have to have a control.
You've always got to have a control. We're going to go ahead and we're going to jump into the football. First, we're going to get some stuff out of the way that is all office work. What's the word I'm looking for, Josh? Something that you just have to do before you move on to football. We'll just say that. And that is, first and foremost, we'd like to say thank you to our Patreon members. If you'd like to join us on Patreon, you can find us at patreon.com/thecrowncast. It's $5 a month. You get access to a bunch of bonus content. And since there will be an ad in this particular show, we will be putting up some of the shows without the ad reads. So you can listen ad-free if you so choose to join us on Patreon. There will also be a special giveaway for Brandon Cambridge. That's right. Every time we talk to a player, we end up doing a giveaway. Why? Because we think it's fun, and we think it's a fun way to commemorate interviewing each of these players. If you would like to get in on this giveaway, we have a signed Charlotte FC hat from Brandon Cambridge that you can find on our social media to be released shortly, how you enter. So keep your eyes up, keep your eyes open. And for Patreon members, check the Patreon, because there is a special second giveaway for you guys to enter. And now we can talk about Toronto. Let's start with the big flare in the Toronto game. What everybody's going to remember is the Lorenzo Insigne goal. It's a world-class goal from the top of the box. And I think a lot of people are going to leave thinking, Charlotte was flawless. Flawless is strong. Charlotte was quite good, and we got beat by a world-class shot. But there are things you can do to limit these opportunities. And Josh, I think I'm going to go to you, because you specifically said, hey, I want to get a talk in on this one.
Yeah, so I think first it is important to note that this is an excellent finish by Insigne. And the credit, first and foremost, I think should go to him for that moment of brilliance, which ultimately leads to them winning that game. My big issue as I watched it is, I think we can acknowledge the brilliance of Insigne while also saying that Charlotte made it too easy for him. Insigne is a guy, like a lot of wingers, who wants to get onto his preferred foot. And when you watch that goal back, in my opinion, it is just way too easy for him to cut inside and to get pretty far into the middle of the pitch without any sort of resistance. Arfield, who, in fairness to him, is more of a attacking midfielder, you might say, not really a defensive guy, is backing off of him. But behind Arfield, you have Nathan Byrne, you have Westwood, and both of them also kind of are backing off. You have no one rushing the space that you know a guy like Lorenzo Insigne wants to go into. And that's my only sort of nitpick with this. I would term it that. It's a nitpick. I don't think it's something that we should kill the team for. I don't think it's a sign of a defensive weakness or anything right now. But when you talk about a game like this where the margins ended up being really fine, I want to see someone charging that space that we know he's going to go into, and at the very least make that shot even more difficult, because he's really able to just sort of get to the spot he wants to, wind up, and there's really no one within a couple yards of him to try to put him off. And so I think it's something that I know we've talked in the past about issues with Charlotte and allowing guys to get shots off at the top of the box. I'm not saying that that's going to continue to be a case under Dean Smith, but I don't think that it's solely Lorenzo Insigne who is responsible for that goal. He gets 95% of the credit. We got to take about 5% of the blame.
So Josh, I'll jump in here on this because last year we struggled closing down the top of the box. It was an area that we saw a lot of higher percentage and higher value shots than you would expect from that area. These aren't high value shots. I don't know what the average shot from outside the top of the box is, but it's probably somewhere in the like 0.01 or 0.02 XG chances. But we saw a lot of people get out there and have time to set up or get in good positions where they were under no pressure taking the shot. So this isn't necessarily something I would describe as new for Charlotte FC, although one of the things that I'd like to potentially bring to highlight in you, and I'm going to get your opinion on this, is I love Ashley Westwood. I love him dearly. But in the last couple of games, I think you can just see Ashley Westwood's legs start to go at 45 minutes. And a part of me questions in that midfield whether or not he is going to be able to keep up with the athleticism, especially when, like you've talked about before, Josh, we see him pressing all the way up the top of the field when the press triggers, whether he is going to be able to keep up with that intensive level game and whether or not it's going to open us up to shots like this in the future. Ewan?
Yeah, we've spoken about Westwood in the midfield a little bit, probably more so in off podcast discussions that we have actually on, just in terms of that athleticism and whether it's at the level that it was at last season when he was like a very, very good box-to-box midfielder and clearly had the engine required to play the sort of high-pressing football that Latanzio wanted. That has had a drop-off, and it is visible. And like you mentioned there, if it is visible, then it's also something that gets worse as a game goes on. So I do think that's an issue, and that's something that I think came up from the first game and has persisted. In terms of that being an issue in this particular goal, with maybe then the players not having enough in the legs, Westwood in particular, to go out and close player down, I think this goal happening and the shot happening like this is part of the overall philosophy of the team, in that they're happy with a shot like that happening in a moment like that when they're happy with the result at hand at a certain time in the game. I think they're more than happy to live and die by that. And if someone pulls off a world-class shot like Insigne does, you know, that's what they live with. Because this is, as far as I see in the three games so far, is a bit of a margins team. We're going to, you know, work as hard as we can. We're going to be sensible in the way that we press. Our back unit is not only going to be very solid and very well disciplined, our box defending in particular, that's probably been the biggest improvement from last year to this year, is something that we're leaning on a lot. So we feel comfortable defending the box and having, you know, shots come in from range and balls come in from wide. We feel confident dealing in it. And then in exchange, we feel like if we just get one chance, or we feel like we're really well drilled in our own set pieces, that we can win on the margins with this stuff. It's why you've seen a game finish 1-0, a 1-1, and a 1-0. It's all small margin stuff.
And Josh, you want to get in on this?
Yeah, I think you've just made a good point, Ewan, in that I think in general I agree that if a player is taking a shot from the positions that Insigne did, in general I'm also pretty happy with those shots being taken because they are low percentage. The only thing I think I would push back a little bit with that is I do think that there are certain players where that should not be the case. And I think, regardless of the fact that Insigne's had a pretty down time in MLS, he is clearly not the player he was in Italy. I mean, it's the reason he's in MLS currently. I still look at him, though, as a player who is very talented and has that in his locker. If that is one of the Toronto midfielders in that position, I'm really okay with the way we've backed off. For me, my big issue is, when I go into that game, I think we cannot let Lorenzo Insigne beat us. He has to be a focal point, probably with Bernadeschi. That's sort of where I draw the line. Again, as you said, it takes a world-class moment for that to still come off. I think I would just in general prefer us to recognize maybe that's the player that we shouldn't allow that to happen with.
Yeah. I was just going to say, baking player quality into the tactical outlook is kind of the point that you make there. Just having little adjustments for opposition players where this is our rule, but if it's him, we do something else. I can take that. That makes a lot of sense.
I do want to jump in a little bit here just because this is a team that has now played three games, and the game we're discussing is game number two. Is game number three. Will have only played two. Math. Numbers. All of the preseason stuff taken out. I don't necessarily have a problem if what they were told was, hey, we are going to continue to practice and master our basic shapes. And we are going to continue and practice and master our defenses. And halfway through the season, when it's in your bones that you know where to be, then we might start saying, okay, now we shuffle it up. Now, I don't know whether that's the truth. It might have been that they had very clear instructions. You don't let Lorenzo Insigne shoot the ball no matter where he is. And in that case, somebody messed up. But I struggle with this one because I see it both ways. I can see the expectation that a professional team should be able to adjust for player ability on the fly. And I can also see that a brand new team probably should be focusing on structurally making sure everything is correct before trying to make those on the fly changes. You and anything you want to add to that?
No, that all makes a lot of sense. I think you can put both sides of this across and feel pretty comfortable that both have their merits. It's literally just a case of, you know, players are tactics. You shouldn't put out a tactical outlook with your own players that makes no sense for them. If you don't have good wide players, don't play the ball out wide. If you don't have a good player in the air in the box, don't have your game plan focused around a load of crosses, etc. The easy stuff. Same should go for the opposition. If you have a player who's really good at shooting from range, don't just have that baked into your game plan because you feel comfortable with that generally defensively. That all makes a lot of sense. It's just about whether in Dean Smith's head and in the general defensive organization's head, even with Insigne being the player of threat, whether they still think, even though they would rather have other players shoot, of course, whether they still think that's a good trade-off. I'm just trying to think whether that is a situation where they actually work on that and think this can't happen against prime players on the opposition, or whether they just looked at that and thought it was a great goal and, yeah, we'll continue to live by that. Because it does make it seem worse that we lost 1-0 and that was the moment. That also, it plays a part in this as well, that you just think if one player could have closed out in that moment, maybe it's 0-0 and we go from having a good start to the season to a great one. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that adjusts.
And I will say in the notes here, I didn't specifically pick these players out. So Josh, you can tell me if one was particularly further away than the other. You have Arfield, Westy, and Byrne as noted here. Of them, the one I would have expected to still have the legs to close out is Scott Arfield, obviously, because he came in as a sub. But I do think it speaks to a potentially greater concern that if you look at the three players noted here, and you also look at Junior Urso and some of the other players on our field, I wouldn't expect any of these guys to have the legs to intensely press at 80 minutes, 70 minutes, 60 minutes into a game. And that's a lot of our field that is of an age that high intensity pressing will become a problem as time develops. I don't think we have an answer to it right away. Two things can be true. There can be a concern, and also these can probably be the best players for the position at the time. And I think two things can be true might be a theme that runs through our show today. Josh, is there anything you want to say on that?
Yeah, I think that just sort of the last point I want to make on this, because that is my big feeling, is two things are true. It's a world-class goal, and it's also something that I would prefer us to have done better. The last thing I'll say on this is it's not even really like a pressing issue for me. It's the fact that Lorenzo Insigne is incredibly one-footed. He has not scored a goal with his left foot in almost 2 years, and that was back when he was in Italy. Don't let him get onto the right foot. That's my only point, right? And like that's where my sort of annoyance came. It's a similar annoyance that I had back in the Vancouver game when Vargas did not push up quick enough and that allowed the guy to stay on, right? It's these small things that, as you guys have pointed out, probably get ironed out as the year goes on and as the automisms come into place. But it's just something that annoyed me about the goal. Again, 5% is on us. The majority of that, I have to give credit to him.
When they got the dossier on Lorenzo Insigne, line one in bold letters was, don't let him shoot on his right.
Yes.
What you're telling.
Yeah. I think everyone in world football probably knows that Lorenzo has a right foot, and that's what he wants to use.
Okay, we will move this along a little bit. I'm going to jump over to you, Ewan, because there were some stylistic notes about Charlotte in general that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, obviously we're three games in now, and it's not a massive sample size, but it's three games which have all gone in fairly different directions. The one thing that we are missing is us playing for extended periods behind. But still, it's three games where we can take a fair bit in terms of, okay, what do we actually want to do? What is our kind of full game plan? So, stylistically, just kind of almost consolidating a few things that we've mentioned before, very much out of possession oriented. You see now that we have a plan from our own kickoffs, which is to kick the ball off and kick it down the field directly to their defense, because our best plan is to press the opposition's defense to try and get the ball off them when they're unsettled from being in possession, transitioning to out of possession from deep. Like, if you want it to seem, if you want to make it very clear how you feel your best opportunity to score goals is, then that being our strategy from kickoffs, I think it paints a very clear picture of that. And that's something which has happened now. We've seen it a few times. So I think we can put that in as confirmed from, you know, tactical perspective, from kickoffs and what we want to do. The other thing that I wanted to kind of build off of as well was, we mentioned this after the first game on the pod, the idea of what the biggest difference from Dean Smith to Latanzio is. Because both of them are out of possession focused head coaches, from what we've seen of both. A lot of their chance creation, they want to come from out of possession, and they both want to play the ball fairly long. But we talked about the intricacies of what makes the two long ball games different. That Dean Smith wants to play it quickly and get vertical very quickly. Latanzio is wanting to bait a bit of the press and then play over the top when we have a numbers advantage after we get players to commit. And I was actually, I wanted to make sure that I wasn't being stupid on this in terms of what it looked like from a data point and a statistical output. And these aren't in-depth numbers, but I just wanted to have a look at these to see if it reflected. And last season, we were 10th in total passes. And I think 11th, I think we took a little bit of dip in short passes. And so far this season, per 90, because obviously there's a little bit of discretion between the teams that have played four games, the teams that have played two, and the teams that have played three. So far, per 90, we are bottom sixth. We are sixth bottom in total passes played. And I think we're seventh bottom in short passes played, which not only am I kind of saying that our game plan under Dean Smith is to play quickly and get the ball forward as quick as possible. So we're either getting into an attacking wing position, or we're getting a restart off the back of a defender, putting the ball out for a deep throw-in or a corner, rather than the Latanzio way of lots of passes. Pass it back, centre-back to centre-back, centre-back to full-back, full-back to midfield, midfield back to defender to bait them in. We're doing everything a lot quicker, and we're doing it in less passes now. And again, we've only played three games, and a lot of that has been sort of with a lead. So if everything evens out over a season, the statistics could even out as well. I just wanted to have a look at that based off what I saw had been the changes in our in possession. And so far, it seems like both the eye test, the tape, and the statistics back that up. But again, early days, I just thought it was interesting that that was how it looked at the moment.
Yeah, I really like that, because admittedly, three games is not a significant data sample, right? It's three games. But it is fun to see something where the eye test is so clear. We've talked about in times that over-the-top ball to Kerwin Vargas out on the right, and Enzo Capetti, we're going to have to talk about him later, having the ability to hold off defenders and receive that out ball does allow us to be so much more direct this season, and seeing the numbers come with it is an interesting thought process. I think it will be something to keep an eye on. Josh, do you want any say on this one, or are you ready to move on to some of the player news?
I would just say, I think what's interesting to me is, and I think I made this point on Twitter, maybe one of the games, to Ewan's point about the quickness and getting the ball up the field, I do feel like we've seen Milanda in particular make more long passes and some maybe medium switches than the previous year plus that he's been with us. And that's something that's exciting for me, because I do remember when he was first signed that, you know, going off the highlights and some of the little clips that you saw, he did appear to have some passing range to him. And so getting back to that, I think is exciting. As you guys said, it's three games. I'll be curious to see what happens. As the year goes on, I'll be curious to see what happens once we have a quote unquote full squad, right? Does that change anything? The fact that we're playing who we're playing right now. But it, as Ewan said, it is definitely different.
I like to talk about Milanda because I want to say it was against Vancouver that he had like a long ball on the turf all the way up to the left wing that I went, who hit, who, what, why? And it was a good pass. I went, I would love to see him add more of that to his game. And forgive me, Josh, his name is escaping me right now. Super young, Hamidi Diop. One of the things that we talked about Hamidi Diop when he first came into the team is that on his left foot, that long ball over to the right wing from the defensive positions was, if I was going to say anything about him, really stood out. That was something that stood out. So just in general, the thought process of if we are moving the ball up faster and longer, those players who are capable of doing that or capable of developing it might have some advantages in the future. I don't necessarily know that Hamidi Diop is going to be the answer, but we will maybe talk about that later. Ewan, ready to move on?
Yeah, just at one point on what you mentioned there, the crossfield passes, the more directness of some of the centre-backs play. This isn't something that obviously they've learned over the winter to actually do physically and are now doing it. It's a coach thing. It's something that they're being encouraged to do. And it goes back to something that actually Brandon Cambridge spoke about in our interview. The idea of that our wingers are now wider when we're in possession. So obviously you can't hit a crossfield ball or a diagonal pass to someone who isn't wide. So that is one of the outballs that we have in our arsenal. So when you are a team that the in-possession ideas aren't quite there, the out-possession stuff has been taught really, really well. The in-possession stuff will come, but right now we're just trying to get those kind of things nailed down to give us a high floor there. Having players stay wide, wingers stay wide, and have an outball like a diagonal that can just kind of reset the picture, give us 3 seconds to get into shape, reshape everything. And then it also gets us progressed fairly high up the pitch, usually a good 20, 25 yards, and let, you know, everyone kind of get over to that side and just try and create some variables. It's a really smart and simple way to get some in possession stuff going. So yeah, as simple as it is, it's good that we're actually doing it. It's getting the basics right.
Today on Getting the Basics Right with Dean Smith. Yeah. Does seem to be a repeating theme, doesn't it? I'm gonna move us on. I'm gonna talk very quickly about the fact that Jabril Gianni now will be available for the next one. Is that correct, Josh?
Yes, I believe so.
I believe he's all sorted and will be available. I'm excited to see him. I think that there is a very real chance that he slots into this team quite quickly. I don't know that Junior Urso is, you know, the dead set starting in that position. the Josh shaking of his head says no.
In fairness to Junior Urso and the front office, I don't think that his acquisition was ever meant to be for a starter.
It was meant to help the team. Yeah,
it was a depth piece move, which I really like from that perspective. While we've waited for Diani and maybe some other players, he's been forced to play, I think, a little bit more than would be expected. So that's not a slight on Urso. I want to make that very clear. I still personally like the acquisition.
He thought he was coming here to put his feet up. He was going to get to train and then just sort of relax on the bench, chat with his buddies. No, now he's got to do all this extra work. He wasn't expecting. I'm excited to see Jabril Gianni come in because we're going to get to see what this guy's made out of. And whether it's this game he comes in or whether it's another game he comes in, I am excited to see what he will bring to the team. I think that we could use his pace and his power and some of the other things he brings in the midfield. The other ones I'd like to talk about, the big one is obviously news is broken that Enzo Capetti is injured and likely to be out for 4-ish weeks is what we're currently getting. That's a big impact on the squad. And not only is it a big impact on the squad, Enzo Capetti has been a focal point of the media hype. He has been a narrative around Charlotte FC since the day he came in. came in and he had that South American style where he was on the ground a lot and he was yelling at refs a lot and he was very theatrical. And some people loved it. Some people hated it. He has been divisive now for the entirety of his time at Charlotte. And he's finally gotten the opportunity to go be the man wearing the crown, to be the king. Three games where I think I can realistically say what he does off the ball, the way he moves defenders around, the way he sets himself up, the positions he gets in are all really just top class. It was now a matter of, can this guy actually put the ball into the back of the net? And after three games, we saw three chances that most of us would say we would have liked to have seen it happen once. What's developing online now is there appears to be sort of a taking sides of the people who are ready to start lighting the torches and grabbing the pitchforks, and the people who are saying, no, this guy is good. Listen, look at all this other stuff he's doing. The finishing is going to come. And I'd like to have the most calm discussion we can have about this, because I think it's important to analyze. You know, I think how a player of this magnitude fits into your club does actually matter. So, Josh, I'm going to start with you on this one. In your opinion now, where are we at with Enzo Capetti, and what does the future hold in the near term?
Yes, this is a tough one because at the end of the day, I think that there's this friction between the idea of Enzo does do a lot of good things off ball. I think his hold up play is really good. I think he's gotten himself in a position, but you also want your striker to score goals, and he hasn't. The one thing I will say about Enzo is when you look at his last few years, he is either bang on when it comes to goals and his XG, or he has outperformed his XG in terms of goals. Except for this year, he's currently sitting at 1.1 XG with zero goals, which I think speaks to some of this. If you're pessimistic, you'll call it lack of finishing. If you're optimistic, you'll call it getting into good positions and the luck just not being there. I tend to be part of that latter group. I think Enzo is getting himself into really good positions. I think he's working his tail off. And I think if this injury hadn't come along, I think the goals would start to come. Where I'm starting to get a little bit worried is that I wouldn't say that he's a injury-prone player necessarily. But last year, some of his time was interrupted through injury. At the end of the day, last year, he only started 23 games. He only got into 26. Those 26 appearances were actually the most appearances he's had since 2001. He's gone 23 appearances, 25, 26. So you're talking about a guy who actually doesn't have a long history of starting and playing and appearing in every match like you might want. This is a big year for Enzo because similarly to, I think, players like Ujwiak in the past, you can say you believe in the player, you can say all the good things that they're doing, but if the production eventually doesn't come, then I think you have to discuss whether it's time to move on. I'm still a believer in Enzo. I'm hoping that this injury is not very serious, because I do think he has the ability to score a load of goals for us.
So, Ewan, I'm going to jump over to you as well, but I'm going to add another caveat, and that it has been discussed, it has been publicized, that Enzo has had some mental challenges, has struggled with the pressures of being at Charlotte FC and the pressures of not scoring goals, and has been paired up with a mental health professional in order to tackle these challenges. The first thing I'm going to say is nothing in the world makes me happier than the fact that that sports programs are now willing to do this. Mental health challenges are real. They are debilitating in ways that most of the people who suffer from them cannot properly express. And for many of them, help is absolutely needed. So I want to make it clear, I am so glad that Charlotte FC has done this, and I'm glad that professional sports in general now are able to do this. Something that I'd like to pose to you, Ewan, is there is a huge amount of pressure on him, but I don't think it's unjust. right? Athletes are inherently capable via dumb luck of genetics, of doing things that the regular human being cannot do. Olympic athletes are only capable of what they do because physically they were born with a body that when trained to excess can survive that. And not everyone's body can do it. Everybody's body produces lactic acid at different levels, right? Mental health challenges can be the same. And while I'm glad he's getting treated for it, and I want it to be addressed, I certainly don't want it to go, you know, unnoticed in the background, this is another place where he now has to overcome in order to step up to what will be the demands of the striker at Charlotte. Thoughts on where he's at, thoughts on his future.
Yeah, in terms of the pressure.
The pressure, his injuries, wherever you want to go with it, buddy.
Yeah. I'm just going to say that the pressure part of this and the idea that he's struggling with that and it's kind of weighing on him a fair bit, as you allude to there, it's not something you can really take away at this sort of level of sport, is it? You can just kind of try and treat it as best you can. And it's obviously a good thing that they are doing that. I second everything that you say with regards to that. But yeah, it just so happens that he is now the only DP until, you know, we get everything confirmed with Abada. He's the only DP at a team that doesn't have like high hopes, but is looking to be pretty competitive. And not only that, but he's not a midfielder who can be, you know, judged on kind of getting about the pitch and doesn't play the ball well. He's not a defender who can be judged on obviously clean sheets, which is a bit of a team thing. But, you know, are they distributing well? Are they, you know, they're winning their duels and things like that. He's a striker. And ultimately, as good as anything that he does, it's going to come down to that goal record. And when results don't go your way, it's going to especially going to come down to your goal record. And when results don't go your way and you've lost a game without scoring a goal as a team, it's going to even more come down to that. So, you know, it layers and weighs a little bit further on him. I don't really have much concerns about him as a player at all. You can analyze the transfer, analyze the age, analyze the fee, analyze, you know, a potential injury record, which you can dive a little bit further into and say, overall, was this a good transfer? You can dive into that a little bit more. But in terms of, is he one of our best players right now? And in terms of, is he our best number nine? And does he give us the best chance to win? Just kind of a very easy yes across the board on those. The goal thing, it depends who you talk to, the goal stuff. It really is. And that's why it's such a polarizing issue. And you mentioned there that it's flaring up again, as it has done at times last season, the debate surrounding him. And the reason why it's a hot debate is that people have strong issues on both sides of it. I'm someone who just kind of, if a number nine is playing well and doing all the little things and the pressing's good and chances are coming, I never really have that much doubt that the goals will ultimately come. I feel like there's a good track record of that regressing, positively regressing over different leagues and different, you know, countries, whatever it may be, different players. I always feel like that evens out, even in its worst cases. And I've seen horrible cases of it. It always eventually evens out, which is why if you follow me on Twitter, you'll see me backing up some of the worst regarded strikers in the world, because I just always think that it's going to positively regress. Whereas other people, and they're entitled to, see three games and no goals, and they get annoyed by that, because this guy, I think, is probably the highest earner on the team and is, to their mind, not doing his job, which top priority is to score goals. So I get it from both perspectives, but in terms of where I'm at with it, I haven't changed a whole lot. Like, these three games, if anything, have made me think more of him than they have less.
Yeah. So I'm going to jump in, and I'm going to return to my theme of today's episode, and that is two things can be true. He can be a fantastic striker who's very good off the ball and is good at pressuring, good at moving defenses, and good at providing an out ball. And he can also, at the exact same time, need to score more goals if he wants to be the future of Charlotte FC. He has three games in 2024. He has had three very good opportunities to score goals. He has taken none of them. And I think that part of the reason everyone is reacting to those so strongly is that all three of them were what I would describe as very good chances that did not come to much. I think he only even gets a shot away in one of them. One of them does become a goal because the ball is moved backwards to Yuri Tavares. But there were, in each of those individual events, a moment where everyone got the chance to say, the new king is here. And in each of those events, we did not get to say that. And as a result, I think when the pressure's on you like that, the backlash also comes on you like that. And that's just what it means to be a professional striker. I have seen the best players in the world go out and not score for 5-6 games, and then they light it up for huge parts of the season. And if he finishes the season with 24 goals because he just decided to start lighting it up, we are all going to be very, very happy, right? There are a few people in the world who I think break tradition. Harry Kane, as much as it hurts me to admit it, has the ability to finish the ball at what is a superhuman level. He has trackers in his boots, and when he hits the ball, it goes into the net. And it's very annoying for me personally, but it's the truth. Cristiano Ronaldo was capable of doing things that were beyond standard. Lionel Messi was capable of doing things that were beyond standard. And some people go the other way. You could argue that many people say finishing is fake, except for Gabriel Jesus. That is a common statement in the world, that you'll always regress to the mean, except for Gabriel Jesus. Eventually, if you are getting chances, you are going to finish the ball. And I don't think we are going to see a striker really, really outperform himself in the MLS. Ultimately, this guy has 1xG and has not yet gotten that goal. And that's sad, but I'm certainly not about to send him to the hangman's post. Josh, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I actually think, as much as I like, as an Arsenal fan, Gabriel Jesus, I actually think he's really appropriate to bring up in this conversation. Because again, when you talk about players and do they have the ability to finish, because that's what you're hearing a lot about Enzo, is he's just not a good finisher. He just doesn't. The numbers, in my opinion, again, don't back that up. Mm-hmm. He is, again, bang on with his XG and his goals over seasons, except for this year, or he's outperformed it. But you can look at a player like Gabriel Jesus, and he's actually the opposite. He tends to underperform his XG. Mm-hmm. I would be more worried about Enzo. And I'm also not comparing the two. Please don't say that, yeah. Josh is saying Enzo Capetti is better than Gabriel Jesus. What I'm just saying is that I would be more worried about Enzo and an apparent lack of finishing if there was that history of underperforming the XG. I will also caveat this by saying he's not scored a super high number of goals in his career. I think his tally, at least what FBref has, is 11 goals. So again, I understand all that plays into it. But my bigger point is I actually think Enzo has been rather unlucky this year with that, with his finishing. And I think that if he even had one goal, the narrative around this and the news of his injury would not be taken as gleefully as it is in some quarters. I know it's not everyone, but you know, some people are. This is good for them because Patrick Adjiman, for them, is the better striker right now. I tend to disagree with that, but we're about to find out.
Yeah, time will tell. And I would like to take a quick moment to talk to you about our sponsors. The wait is over. DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of NASCAR, is now live in North Carolina. You can legally bet on your favorite sports anytime right here in North Carolina with DraftKings. For a limited time, new customers sign up with a promotion code QCPN and bet $5 will receive $250 instantly in bonus bets. DraftKings is said to have the best features, including same-game parlays, player props, and more, with fast and easy payouts at your fingertips. For Charlotte FC, because sports betting is now legal in North Carolina, you can find Charlotte in their upcoming game, have a line of plus 135 to Nashville, plus 215 for a draw, and plus 190 to Charlotte. So if that's something that you're interested in, you can go check it out. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now using code QCPN and bet $5 to get $250 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code QCPN. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 877 185543 or visit morethanagame.nc.gov. 21 plus, North Carolina only. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Deposit and eligibility restrictions apply. Terms at DraftKings.com/sportsbook/NC. NASCAR is not a sponsor of this promotion and is under and is used under license. Okay, we're back. Thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to them for helping this show go on. And let's talk now about the fact that we've talked about some players who are going to be stepping away, some players who might be coming in. I missed one. Oh, I'm terrible. Ewan, really quickly. Jere Urdenen is going to be going away with the Finnish team. You want to talk about that really quick?
Yeah. Yeah, he'll... And this is obviously something that we'll probably have to get used to. And we have been used to because Karol Swiderski was in every single Poland squad, I believe, whilst he was in Charlotte. So we're fairly used to the idea that some of these players are going to be taking a bit of time off game to game with international duty. It won't be this weekend that he'll miss. It'll be next weekend's game. The international break will begin on the game. The games roughly begin sort of this time next week. So next Wednesday, 20th of March, roughly around that time, that Wednesday and that Thursday, they'll start kicking in. So yeah, enjoy Jere Urdenen as much as I have in these first three games this weekend, because we won't be getting him the week after. But yeah, he's been really good and is well worthy of his call up. And yeah, people will have a little bit of annoyance about this. And that's fair enough, because we want him in our team as much as possible because he's a good player. But overall, this is a good thing. And the higher we want the team to go, generally speaking, and kind of keep competing and get further up the conference standings, this is probably something that if that happens, we should be getting more used to. And our adjustments off it are going to be interesting because, like I say, Jere Urdenen has been one of my favourite players to watch in this team so far this season. I felt comfortable backing him in the off-season with the fullback role becoming a bit more conventional, and seems to have been the case so far. And he's also on corner duty now, doing a good job of that. So yeah, he'll be a miss, but yeah, it's a good thing that he's getting called up. It reflects that his performances at club level are going well, which is obviously good for us.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think that I take directly the words of a man named Clive Palmer, who has always been a little bit of a guiding light in football to me, who is also a podcaster on another show for another league. But one of the things that he has said is that you lose players during a season and you find players during a season. When some players step away, other players step in. And when you lose leaders, new leaders step up. It's the cycle of life. It's the cycle of football. And we are going to lose more players this season than just Enzo Capetti for four games. And we are going to find other players this season. So, Josh, I'll start with you. The next couple weeks are going to be chaos. Jabril Gianni is in. Leo Labada is going to be in shortly, although we don't know exactly where he's at with his visa thing. Who knows? Maybe he won't be until next year. We have now seen Nikola Petkovic get a debut, whether or not he's going to get more minutes into the team. We're about to be losing Urdenen to international duty. It's all going to shake out somehow. What do you see coming down in the future?
So what I'm actually most interested to see is whether we have Patrick Adjuman as our nine moving forward, or whether we move Yuri Tavares into that position. My understanding is that's the position he played mostly at Legacy and played very well. I think this is especially true once we do have Abada. I think I would kind of expect Adjuman to maybe start this weekend for Nashville. But when we get Abada, my assumption is that we'll have Vargas off the left, Abada off the right, and that striker position will be up for grabs. I have been very pleasantly surprised with what I've seen from Yuri Tavares. He's still a very young player. But, and this is going to make it seem like I'm very down on Adjuman, which I'm not, I actually think Tavares looks more ready to play for long stretches than Adjuman. Adjuman, to me, still looks like a guy who is a rotation piece and is a guy who can come and do a job off the bench. But Tavares is looking to me like a guy who can make a real impact. And so over this next month with Enzo out, that's what I'll be really curious, because I think a lot of people are just going to assume that it's going to be Adjiman who starts up top. And I just have this little inkling and this feeling that once we get these wingers set, it might actually be Yuri who's being played through the middle. But we'll see.
I want to get in on that because you have echoed my thoughts. if you go back and listen to the preseason, just took them right out from under me. God, what a Josh move. If you go back and listen to the preseason, you'll remember me saying, I want Yuri Tavares to get a chance, and I want him and Patrick Ogjemong to be able to go at each other and see who wins. And I think I'm getting my chance. I'm excited for this because Dean Smith has come out and he said very clearly that the starters are the starters. And if you continue to put in a solid performance for me, you are going to continue to play for me. And the things that are going to change that are you continually do not meet expectations or you're injured. Those are the things that are going to change it. If you are not available to play or if you are not meeting my expectations, I do not think you could find a Charlotte FC fan who would say Yuri Tavares has not met expectations. I think you would probably find a significantly higher number of fans who would say that Yuri Tavares has exceeded expectations. I still stand by the fact that I don't think Kerwin Vargas's best side is on the right. I think it handcuffs him. I think he's better on the left. I realize everyone is better on the left, another one of the themes of our show. But I think that he has put in the hard yards and the work, and Dean Smith is going to say a couple trip-up performances aren't going to be an issue for you. Once Abada comes in, he's here to play. You don't spend that kind of money on somebody who's going to go sit the bench for a couple months. I think once he's in and he's comfortable, he's playing. And he's going to play on the right. If that's not what happens, somebody call me because I need to figure out how football works. I think Kerwin Vargas is going to get told by Dean Smith, you did the hard yards for me, buddy. You did the hard work for me. I'm going to go ahead and put you on the left. And I think what was going to happen is Yuri Tavares was going to get told, hey, I love everything you have done, but you don't have the seniority yet. Your time will come. Now, what I think is going to happen is he's going to look at maybe today, maybe as of Wednesday, March 13th, he is going to look at Patrick Ogjemong and he's going to look at Yuri Tavares in the same room, put them together so he only has to give the speech once. And he's going to say, when the time comes that Abada's in this team, one of you is going to be on the field and one of you isn't. Who wants it? And I'll be honest, with the performances that Tavares has put in, I think Patrick Ogjemong is going to get a chance in this next one because we don't have Enzo Capetti and we also don't have anyone to fill those other winger roles. So I think the wingers are going to stay relatively unchanged. I think Patrick Ogjemong is going to get a chance, but he has to take it. I mean, he has to light it up. Because otherwise, when it's all settled and the dust is cleared, I personally am looking at a front three that is Kerwin Vargas, Yuri Tavares in the middle in the nine, and Leo Labada on the right. Ewan, how are things looking for you?
Yeah, I agree that I think it will be a straight swap between Ogjemong and Capetti. I think the main reason for that is that I think Dean Smith will be really happy with what's happened so far with the team and the out of possession stuff that I mentioned and just generally playing to his plan. So I think from his perspective, he will think, okay, we have a player injured. Let me just not have to reshuffle everything. Let me understand that 10 out of 10 players will be playing the same role and we'll just be swapping one guy out directly for one guy in. Let's just, if we're going to work the margins and we're going to try and get the basics right, let's keep things simple again in our lineup when we're forced to make changes. Let's not put someone here, which means that someone has to go here and then maybe we change this. Let's, you know, make it a direct swap. Even though I find Ogjemong at this stage of his career a little bit of a hard watch in some of the stuff that he does, there's still going to be elements of his game which might help. I mean, you look at the guy and athletically out of possession, he could create his own advantages, which even Capetti, who's really good out of possession, doesn't have, just by the fact that he'll be able to cover more space. And when he's defending passing lanes, he'll be able to just provide more, you know, just pretty much just longer legs to be able to block those lanes.
I will ask you, and do you feel like Patrick Ojemong is going to be at an inherent disadvantage because, you know, other people's shoulders are going to be bumping into his shins? I've heard that can be quite painful. Like, would that be, do you think that's going to be an issue?
Well, yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense that that would be an issue for anyone. A lot of people have used the baby giraffe analogy of someone just kind of learning right their limbs. Well, there you go. Exactly. Exactly. It's and it's not that far off. He does have, and it's that tough middle ground of he's got a lot to learn. Does that mean he doesn't get a game? Or does that mean you should be trying to get him minutes here and there so that he can learn because you believe in all the other stuff? He has been very used to dominating younger players with his size, and he can still do that at higher adult levels in senior games. It's just he needs to learn how, and so far he hasn't really learned how. At the moment, it does seem like those, you know, those theoretical elbows into his legs are, you know, his size is being used against him because he looks a little bit uncoordinated, he looks a bit off balance, but we haven't got a proper chance to see him outside of the preseason stuff, so maybe that has been an emphasis. Maybe Dean Smith has said, we know you've got a body to fill out into, let's start filling it out, let's get in the gym and let's just get you a little bit stronger. It hasn't seemed that way in the sub appearances so far, but you know, there could always be a surprise there when you get to put a full game plan around a player and work from there. So it'll be interesting to see. I do also think there is a case, at least in the short term, if we get into this situation where Abada is available and Capetti is still out, people will think, you know, Abada comes straight in, and he will eventually come into the team and play. He's, you know, we doubled our record transfer fee and he'll be a top earner. Like, of course, he's going to get inside. But for the short term without Capetti, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world if he does stay on the bench to start with, because his back-to-goal game and his kind of midfield build-up second phase game is not a strong suit of his. I've kind of sat on the fence a little bit with him, just because I have some concerns, but also I'm finding it a little bit hard to contextualize him coming from Celtic to Charlotte in MLS. But that is something I do feel confident saying. It needs to be transition stuff happening quickly at his feet rather than the kind of transition stuff that we do where it is quick and over the top, but it's direct to the number nine and then it gets to a player in a second phase. So I wouldn't be annoyed if he started on the bench and we gradually brought this in.
Ewan, you are using logic and saying things that are true and honest and make a lot of sense, but the fan part of me on the inside just hates it.
I'm being very boring is what I'm doing.
you're telling us the truth, which is what we need. But I won't lie to you. With as well as Yuri has done, I want to see it. I want to see Vargas on his better side. I want to see Abada on that right, and I want to see Yuri Tavares get the chance at the nine and show us what he can do and what is his preferred position and the one I think his skills suit better for. And if Patrick Ojemong rips the shirt off him and it's Patrick instead, I want to see it.
Yeah. Now, our best front three of players that we have in general is Abada on the right, Vargas on the left, Capetti down the middle. I 100% agree with that. That's 100% where I'm at. I don't want it to seem like I'm anywhere else, but I just, that short-term little strange little period where we might be adjusting a little bit here, a little bit there, we're trying to make things work with Ojemong in the nine role. I don't think it's the worst idea if we delayed it. That's all I mean.
It is the worst. It's the worst idea. No, it's absolutely not the worst idea. I'm in a, fans of the show, you know, we usually try and keep these to 45 minutes. I made the decision early on that we had lots of stuff we wanted to talk about and it was fun stuff to talk about. So if you want to break this one up into two, feel free, but we're going to keep going because there's stuff to discuss and it's the fun stuff. So we're going to be seeing shakeups in the back line. Nathan Byrne has done quite well. I actually think he has exceeded my expectations for how he was going to be performing in this new system, but we're going to get a force change in the fact that we will be losing Urinen for a little bit in the international break. We're going to lose players at times. New people are going to come in. Josh, from a defensive side of the field, from a midfield side of the field, it's fun to talk about the strikers, but maybe we can say a quick note on how you see that middle of the pitch changing with Jabril and whoever might come in for Yere.
Yeah, so when we look at the midfield, from a pure age perspective, I am very much hoping that Diani can hit the ground running. I know that there are some, and we've talked about it on the pod, there are some concerns about whether he is an upgrade or not over the man he's ostensibly replacing in Derek Jones. But the one thing is, he is young, And in this league, I don't think you're going to have a successful season if you're trotting out a midfield comprised of 32-plus-year-olds who you're then swapping out in Scott Arfield for another 30-plus-year-old. So just from a pure age, energy, leg standpoint, my hope is that Diani coming in will allow Urso to go and be maybe a sub option for us, where he can run his tail off for 20 minutes. Maybe it lifts some of the burden off of Westwood, and maybe we see some of the legs for Westwood come back. That's where I'm sort of hoping. I still would also, when we look towards the summer, midfield would still be a place that I would like us to recruit at least one more player in. And then the big sort of elephant in the room is Petkovic for me, right? We signed him to a new deal. We talk about Abada and the fee that we paid for him and how that's going to assure him to start. Again, we keep talking about Petkovic was also not a small fee. In the scheme of Charlotte, he was a fairly large outlay. And so I am hoping that they're just getting him used to this level, and that we are slowly going to start seeing more minutes on him, because I think that could also be a big boost for that midfield if you get him in there to cover some of that space. As far as the back line goes, your guess is as good as mine. I mean, the logical choice would seem to be to put Jaylen at right back and Byrne at left back. But, you know, I don't think anyone saw Privet coming in last year for us. So maybe there's something that happens with that as well. Maybe a guy like Nick Scardina or Hamidi Diop gets an opportunity and surprises us.
I will tell you the one I thought might get a surprise run out here is Nick Scardina. Nick Scardina strikes me, and when we talk to him, one of, I think, his strengths is that he could be very much considered a positionless player. He's a good runner. He's got a good engine. He's a generalist skill set that you could put just about anywhere. I do think that he could see success at either side of the left and right back. I don't think he specializes in any of it, right? But yeah, at some point in time, things happen. I don't think we're going to see him. I think if anybody was going to surprise back line, it would be him. But ultimately, the thing that makes the most sense, like you said, is you move Byrne over and you let Jalen Lindsay have a run out and a chance to impress. I guess my question to you, Ewan, would be, if we don't see Jalen Lindsay in this window, should we be worried?
I mean, it kind of depends how we shuffle things, I suppose. If, like, Hamidi Diop, who was played as a centre-back in the preseason, but obviously we know that he is capable of playing left-back. If he comes in, then maybe it's just a case of we're favouring left-siders on the left side and right-siders on the right side. Maybe it's what I kind of spoke to earlier, and that we don't want to make two changes for the sake of one player missing, where we just want to stick with players in the same positions. I would agree that I would put Jalen Lindsay in at right back. I made my thoughts on this fairly clear in preseason as well, that that's just who I'd rather have playing right back. I know you mentioned that you've enjoyed or been slightly surprised at how Nathan Byrne's
been.
Yeah,
I said I've been surprised at how well it's got, not that I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I haven't enjoyed it, and I don't think it's been good, but, like, it's been okay. It's, you know, he's done a job there. There's just a stylistic thing there that maybe we can get into at some later stage if he continues playing that I just have an issue with. But
Can I just jump in here really quick, because everything cycles back to the beginning. Two things can be true. Nathan Byrne can be playing way better than I was expecting based on last year's performances, and I can still think that we might be getting more out of that position.
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. It's definitely fair. But I would put him at left back. I would put Jalen Lindsay at right back. I do think that, like I say, if there was a ready-made left back to put in there, he'd slot him in there just for the sake of keeping everything the same. But there obviously isn't. We've spoken there theoretically about players who might have a little bit of versatility to them. Other players like maybe do this, maybe do that. I think it's probably going to end up being that, yeah, Nathan Byrne, play left back, you're experienced. We think we can get through a game with you there, and let Jalen Lindsay play his preferred position of right back. And the hope being that maybe Jalen Lindsay plays so well there that it stakes a claim for him to keep that spot permanently. But yeah, it's a little bit of early changes, which will be a nice test for a defensive unit that's obviously a lot of people would say has been the most positive part of our season. And to be honest, there's been a lot of talk for Adilson Malanda and how good he's been. We kind of knew that already. We understood that he was going to come and perform at a certain level. Andrew Privet's raised his game from last season. He's a much better centre-back this year so far than he was last season. I think if you had to rank his top five games for Charlotte, his three games this year probably are in that top five, and then pick a couple from last season where, you know, you have a think back and pick your two favourites. But these three have been really good, and an off-season of, you know, he was a midfielder, and obviously we referred to it a little bit there. He came through and ended up playing centre-back for us and was decent enough, did a job, but he's been really good this year. So an off-season of training for that position specifically has obviously made a difference. And yeah, I can't really exaggerate enough. He's been really good so far. So long may it continue.
Any thoughts on Brant Bronico maybe filling in at left back again?
Brant Bronico to left back. Brant Bronico to keeper. Christian Kalina to left back.
It's just one of the options we didn't talk about, and he did play there last year.
Well, I mean, he is still injured.
Yeah.
He is still under injury. But
that first 30 minutes when he was at left back, I mean, that was probably some of the best football we played under Latanzio. But it was in that specific period where playing fullback meant you were also kind of playing midfield. So yeah. I guess that's the definitive difference. But yeah, I'd play him in there if he was fit. I guess he can play everywhere else.
That was right in the middle of the whole world using their left back as an extra midfielder post the Alexander Zinchenko craze. So one, we wish Brant Bronico well and hope that he gets healthy soon and we can see him on the field soon. And that'll be another way that this team gets shaken up, because, you know, Brant Bronico has been loved thus far, you know, by Latanzio, by Marr. His work rate, his effort, his engine are all things that have been put forward by coaches as a reason he should be starting. Does Brant Bronico come in and shake all this up? What does that mean for Nikola Pekovic? There's plenty of more stuff to talk about, but I don't think we don't. I really don't think we do actually have the time today. So now that we are well and away past when I would normally be saying this, Josh, it's so good to have you back, buddy. We have someone who actually knows what they're talking about. For me to say, tell us about Nashville and how we're definitely going to beat Nashville.
I'm going to first start this, because we've been talking a lot about small sample size, with that caveat. For me personally, the way I do these look aheads is I personally don't have enough time to watch every single MLS match. If someone is listening out there and they want to pay me to do that, please let me know, because that will be great. So in the meantime, I look at a lot of the numbers. And ideally, I would have 10 to 12 games worth of data before I could make sort of sweeping judgments. So when we're looking at three games worth of data for Nashville, it's kind of just looking at little bits and pieces to see maybe what might be happening with a team as opposed to what definitely is. All that to say, one of the things that jumped out and surprised me was that Nashville has a earned reputation of being a defensive powerhouse. They kind of build their club identity on defensive solidity. Last year, they tied Seattle for fewest goals allowed in the league. That is not quite the case this year. They have not been terrible defensively by any stretch of the imagination, but they are sitting just under 4 XGA. And it's just a little bit unusual to see where they are in terms of that goals allowed compared with the rest of the league. It's something I would still think would change as the season goes on and will probably even out. But they have allowed some goals this year, and I think that has to give us a little bit of hope from a Charlotte perspective. When you talk a little bit more about the nitty-gritty of who I'll be looking for, three players jump out. One is Teal Bunbury. That's simply because he is their leading scorer. I don't actually, if you want to talk about a striker situation, theirs would kind of worry me too. Teal is a 34-year-old kind of journeyman. He's never had more than 11 goals. He has two this year. It doesn't feel like this is a situation where he's the ideal starter for them. But again, he does have two goals already this year, so someone to look out for. The two more interesting names, I think, though, are Joe Willis, who's a really underrated goalkeeper. He's really solid for this league. One of the numbers I always look at with goalkeepers is a number called PSXG plus or minus. It basically tells you, are goalkeepers sort of performing above or below their average? Over the last 7 years, he's finished with a positive PSXG plus or minus every single year. So he's just really solid. He's a really solid shot stopper and someone who's not going to make a ton of mistakes back there. The guy that I'll be curious to see if he actually starts and if he gets into the game is Jacob Schaffelberg. He's a young winger. He's a very good carrier of the ball. And when we talk about some of the issues that Charlotte has had in the past, he's kind of the player that I think can sometimes give us issues. He gets into the penalty box at a super high rate. He carries the ball a lot. He's available to receive passes in those dangerous areas. He's only started one game, but he's appeared in all three. So he's not a lock to make this starting lineup. But if he is, I would be looking to see how we handle him. And if he comes from off the bench, he's one of those guys where I think you would look at and you'd say, man, if they put him on against tired legs, he could actually do something for them.
Nashville is a team that has traditionally been quite good, and them being nearby us means that we always have a little bit more eye on them. They also have Hani Mukhtar, who just signed a new deal for them. And
I just assumed everyone knew about Hani Mukhtar. That's why I didn't mention him. I mean, if you're following MLS at all,
I'm gonna say it, because I think last year it got us that we played them quite well, and Hani Mukhtar just had a moment of individual brilliance. And I'll be really honest, that's a good team, and even more scary, it's a good team with a player who can just win a game. And some players have that ability; they can just win a game. Ewan, thoughts on this match coming up before I ask everybody for their predictions?
Yeah. Obviously, you mentioned Hani Mukhtar. He's also coming back from a bit of an injury. I believe he hasn't played as much recently. He's been out of the squad and recently, I think, was on the bench and came on. So I'm interested to kind of see how much he plays. They actually have a game tonight, I believe, against Inter Miami? They play again tonight, I believe. So I think the amount of minutes he gets there will maybe be instructive.
I have confirmed it is Nashville versus Inter Miami in the CONCACAF Champions Cup.
Yeah, all good, all good. So yeah, maybe how much he plays in that will be instructive of how much he plays on the weekend. But also in relation to talking about Jerry Erinin and the fact that we'll have him this weekend and we'll be missing him for the international break beyond, it's come at a decent time because we will have him this weekend to play on the left side against someone who may well be coming off the bench for them. But on the right side, McKenzie Gaines. So we know how dangerous that guy is. So yeah. Willie, I'd love to see that matchup.
It's too soon. I couldn't bring myself to talk about it. It's just
I had to bring him up. I had to because someone had to, and I knew it wouldn't be you. So I had to.
the prodigal son returns. Josh, you do know to wear the Charlotte FC shirt, right?
I don't look good in yellow, so that was never happening.
One thing that we can all agree is that we will be wearing the blue. We'll be excited to see Charlotte FC go out and take on Nashville. And you might not see us quite as positive on our predictions for this one, but who knows? Ewan, you're the one who started with violence, so we're going to let you go ahead and give us your prediction for Charlotte FC versus Nashville.
Okay, we've had 1-0, 1-1, 1-0. Obviously, 1-0. First one's a win, second 1-0's a loss. So they've been teasing me with letting me get my 0-0. I feel like I kind of have to stay true to it, not just for any kind of bit or anything like that. I do just think Charlotte FC away from home, and this was kind of reflected in the Toronto game, I think they're a good bet for just very, very low scoring. I don't see there being a lot of goals in this game.
You've given us the reasoning. Now give us the scoreline.
Yep. I'll bump it to 1-1 because I don't think we'll go two games in a row without scoring. So I'll say 1-1.
One all, Josh. What are you thinking?
I'm also on the one all bandwagon, and I'm going to go out and make it an even wilder prediction and say that Mackenzie Gaines breaks all Charlotte FC fans' hearts by scoring a late equalizer off the bench.
Wow. And I hear I thought that Ewan was here for violence. I myself am going to very sadly predict a 0-1 loss. I don't see where Charlotte gets through this team reliably. And I think that if we score, it's going to be chaos factor. I think it's going to be something where, you know, Nashville couldn't properly plan for because they hadn't seen what we were going to do without Enzo Capetti. It's going to be tough for Charlotte to put the ball in the back of the net this time. And there is just enough talent on that Nashville team that I don't think we're going to ship two or three goals, but I struggle to see how 90 minutes go by and they don't figure out how to get one. So my sad prediction for this one is going to be a 0-1 Charlotte loss. But we will hope that it's better than that. Josh, final thoughts before we wrap this up?
My final thoughts are, I actually think that even if we were to go to Nashville and lose, I still think that this has been a really encouraging start to this season. You're talking about one home game followed by three away games, correct?
Yep.
And, you know, two of those in Canada where it's very cold still. I think if you look at that and you've taken the points that we've taken, I think I'm still feeling okay. I think if we can go and we can get a point against Nashville, I'm actually going to be really ecstatic, because I'll say this over and over again this year. You make the playoffs in MLS by getting ties on the road. And a tie on the road for me in MLS is the same as 3 points at home. And so that's where I'm sort of at with this club. I've been pleasantly surprised with how well we've started. And I really don't know, unless we just get absolutely hammered, which I'm not expecting from Nashville, I don't know that that changes that much this weekend.
Yeah, I really like that. I do think Adilson Milanda is going to play a big part in this upcoming game. You and final thoughts?
Yeah, it's similar, I would say. I think if we do lose this game and it's 4 points from four games, I think that's an okay start. If we draw and we have 5 points from four games, I think you put that down as a good start. And it's all within the context of the fact we are starting our first four games of the season with three tough away games. So you can't just say after four games, you know, you want this many points. You have to kind of bake in the schedule as well, factoring in also that our next, after this game, four of our next five games are at home. So we get the flip side of this. So if we go into a run of five games with four home games, with 5 points from our first four games, that would be a really, really good, base to build off of. So if we draw this game, don't get too disheartened. If we lose again, you'd be a bit more frustrated, but don't be too disheartened. We've already set a good platform for us to work off. So yeah, just trying to, even though none of us have predicted us to win this game, be kind of hypocritical and say, just keep the positivity there, even if this game doesn't go our way.
I love it. My final thoughts, and then I'll do the sign out, I promise. This episode won't go on indefinitely. I want to take a quick moment, and I want to highlight Ashley Westwood, and I want to highlight Enzo Capetti for their actions in Toronto. Every time they go out with the young girls, the young boys who accompany them onto the pitch, and that's such an experience for them. But you just saw the dad in Ashley Westwood when he saw the young girl in front of him wearing the Toronto kit, was shivering, immediately took off his Charlotte FC jacket and put it around her. And Enzo Capetti did the same. These guys, we see them on TV. We analyze what they do. We don't very often get to talk about their human moments. I personally love seeing those moments that we get to see them not just as heroes on the football pitch, but as good humans. So I wanted to take a moment to highlight it and point that out. I will go ahead and begin to wrap it up. If you have stuck with us through this whole one in one go, thank you so much. If you've broken up into two goes, thank you so much. However you've consumed this, thank you so much. If you have decided to spend your time with us, we love you. If you'd like to spend more time with us, again, you can find us on Patreon. There is still time to go and maybe get involved in that other giveaway for the Brandon Cambridge patch, special patch signed by him. That's it. We will wrap it up, and we will talk to you again after Charlotte FC go and take our next 3 points from Nashville. Goodbye.
QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.